Hi again, everyone. It's Mark Stenson, and today we're unlocking your world of creativity with our guest, Peter John Comberg. Peter is a creative strategist, an entrepreneur, and now a published author. His book has just been released this week. His book is The Forces of Collaborative Creativity, a practical guide to creative teamwork.
Unlocking your world of creativity with Mark Stenson.
Peter, it's very exciting to have a book coming out.
It is. And it's exciting to be on a podcast.
Well, there you go.
So thank you for inviting me.
Well, welcome aboard. Well, I always like to start the podcast with the lightning round rather than having the lightning round at the end. It's at the end of your day in Milan, Italy.
Yeah.
Was there a particular creative project that was on your desk today that you worked on that, you know, required your full creative attention?
Definitely. Yes. Can't really go into details because I sign NDAs and
of course,
you know, they take away my firstborn and everything else with it if I talk about it. But this one is about, it's a tool we're creating that will help physicians have more meaningful conversations with patients, considering the fact that thanks to the pandemic, a lot of communication is no longer face-to-face. And that takes away a certain level of confidence and ability to, you know, to talk about more emotional things, let's say. And so we're developing a tool that that helps doctors and patients have meaningful conversations and reveal things that need to be revealed in a particular scenario, even when they're not in the same place.
Oh, that's very important. And Peter, do you have a source of inspiration? When you say, I kind of feel creatively stuck, you know, what is a go-to stimulus for you to get your creative juices flowing again?
There isn't a single go-to thing because to me, the most important thing for creativity is diversity. And so whatever I did last time, I want to do something different. I want to get a different perspective. And so to me, it's all about being inspired by something different. I think all creativity is contextual, both when you're creating it. So the space, the people you create it with, and the stimulus you have, that context influences your creativity. And there's also the fruition of creativity, which is contextual, depending on who sees it, when they see it, why they're seeing it, you know, what's their predisposition or expectation. And therefore, all those variables, which are all stimulus, if you like, but they're all contextual, I think you just need to have very, very diverse things stimulating you.
And then what about obstacles? Obviously, any creative endeavor, you know, faces some hurdles. How do you face those hurdles? How do you manage them? How do you get around them, over them, through them?
I bulldoze the obstacles I can, and I weave around the ones I can't. And I think the difference between a good professional creative and somebody who, you know, needs a bit more experience is being able to differentiate between bulldoze mode and weave mode and, you know, getting it right. Because if you weave around something you should have bulldozed, you're probably compromising something. Yeah, I think that's the key.
Yeah. And so many, and you talk about this creative judgment, I guess, but the creative psyche might get frustrated, might get angry, might get blocked by these obstacles. But you're saying just push through.
Wow. Well, you're talking that's a different story.
Yeah. The care and feeding of the creative.
Yeah. Well, the idea of being frustrated as a creative is wrong, in my opinion. And here's why. If we're talking about a creative act which is self-inspired and self-produced, then there are no obstacles. Every single one of them can be bulldozed, and if you don't bulldoze it, that's your choice. If you're a creative doing applied creativity, you're doing it for money and you're doing it for somebody else. If you mistake your realization, you know, your emotional reward with what is actually a job, then you're in trouble. And I think you need to keep sight of the fact that satisfaction, job satisfaction, is getting paid and doing something well and being professional. And the emotional realization of creativity sometimes comes out of that, but don't count on it.
Aye, so true.
Which is why I think creatives, if they are, you know, in applied creativity, they should have personal projects. You should express yourself without barriers in your personal stuff.
That's a very good point. So you're saying that, you know, so you're in the profession of creativity on a commercial level, but you still need this outlet for your creative energy that you control.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Let's do something silly. If you're going to see Bruce Springsteen in a concert, right? And he's famous for like 3 hours of really solid entertainment, right? You want to see Bruce Springsteen sing his songs the way you know he sings them, right? And he might not wake up that morning wanting to do that, but he's going to do it. Now, if he wants to sing, you know, a Puccini opera in the shower before the concert, that's his creativity. That's what he wants to do. That's his expression, and that's, you know, his emotional release. Then he gets up on the stage and sings his famous stuff for you.
That's so true. Well, let's dive into the book, Peter, The Power of Collaborative Creativity. And I guess I emphasize and underline that word collaborative, because just as we were saying, many people think creativity is this individual, you know, sole talent producing something all by themselves. And it's very rarely the case, is it?
Very rarely. I mean, I think the sole creative talent producing something is closely tied to craft. Creativity is, people confuse creativity and craft. If you're a phenomenal sculptor, that act of sculpting is both intellectually creative because you decide what you want to get out of the block of marble you're sculpting. But there's also your technique, your physical work and the effort you put into crafting that thing, okay? That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is an intellectual activity, and collaborative creativity is a group intellectual activity. And sometimes you have, the output is amazing ideas, and sometimes it's not, because sometimes that's not the point. You know, one of the central things about the use of creativity in business, you can use it for many, many things. You don't have to use it just to have new ideas for new products or for new ways of promoting products or whatever. You can use it to discover things about people, help people discover things about themselves. You can use it to get teams to work better together, understand each other better. You can use it to get consensus and alignment around issues which people have difficulty discussing. But through creativity, they can safely confront each other and then find a common ground.
Mm-hmm. And I love the subtitle, you know, that it's a practical guide to bringing these groups together. Because, I mean, you've described some very lofty goals. I mean, we all want to work together. We want to create ideas. But oftentimes groups or their facilitators don't really have the tools and the techniques in which to do that. It sounds like you're really giving us some of that tool and technique kind of stuff.
The book is in two parts. The first part of the book talks about what collaborative creativity is and when it's useful, why you should consider using it in a business, and, you know, it gives you a general understanding of what the moving parts are. But part two of the book is absolutely, it's a step-by-step guide on how to do this. I mean, if somebody, you know, like yourself or somebody with less experience, because let's face it, you can do these things without reading the book. But if somebody with a minimum of experience of doing workshops got this book, you know, they could set up their own collaborative creativity session. And some of the exercises are already in there. It's a very practical book.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. And I like what you said. It's like pull it off the shelf, you know, open it up, and there's a step-by-step guide. Is that your intent?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there are so many variables. Creativity is, as I said earlier, it's all about context. And every time you do a different project with different people, the context changes. So there isn't a process which is completely automatic. You know, it needs a certain amount of interpretation. And one of the things that's fundamental about collaborative creativity is that all the exercises have to be tailor-made. When I say there are exercises in the book, there are examples of types of exercises, but for each of them, I say you have to personalize it. You have to think about this. You have to You have to make it relevant to the people who you want to do this exercise.
Absolutely. And let's talk about the fun part of it. You know, people often like to walk out of a meeting and say, that was a lot of fun. But yet we have to balance that with, I'll call it the productivity, the output. You know, was it also an effective meeting? So how do you find that balance?
By challenging people, which is why one of the, in the book, I mean, the title of the book is The Forces, the Forces of Collaborative Creativity. And there are five forces, okay? There's empathy, realization, invention, cohesion, and self-discovery. Invention is pretty obvious. It's what everybody thinks creativity is for, all right? That's the only one they think it's for. Mm-hmm. And yes, it is good for invention, but it does many other things. And realization is much bigger than fun. Realization is reward, it's purpose. It's people saying, okay, I get what we're doing, why we're doing it, and I'm happy we're doing it. And there's also self-discovery. I mean, if you get people doing creativity for themselves or for others, quite often they learn a lot about themselves while they're doing it. And that's far more effective than just fun. Fun is something that goes away. It's just a nice memory. But self-discovery can change the way you act in a positive way. It can change the way you think about the job you do, your colleagues. I mean, I've done these with all kinds of participants. You know, I've done it with physicians, specialists. I've done it with patients, done it with people in pharma, you know, helping them sort of break down the silos within their companies. The really good sessions, the ones that work well, everybody's exhausted at the end. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because they've really put a lot of effort into it and it's emotionally draining.
Yeah, brain work can be very physical.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You're reminding me sometimes of the perhaps unintended outcome, but that teams really do have these self-realization moments and the empathy and so forth within the group ripples out far beyond the meeting, far beyond the exercise. And I think, you know, this word team building is often used, but that really does help anchor the team to a higher purpose, perhaps.
Exactly. And that's what, I mean, you've touched on something that's central to the book. I think the value of creativity that businesses see is in a widget or something that, you know, they can take to market and monetize. What I try to point out is that there are byproducts of creativity and byproducts of the widget, which are incredibly valuable. The team who learn how to work with each other while they're creating that widget and taking that widget to market, and they are co-authors and they share the glory of that, of taking that widget somewhere and doing something good with it, that is equally as valuable to the company, because that team, through that process, learned a lot about themselves, learned a lot about the market, learned a lot about the way their company can function, which isn't necessarily how it functions now, which is change, which is hard, and which is interesting. So there's so much you can get out of creativity if you just stop focusing exclusively on what's the widget.
So true. And then there's this idea of getting that creativity or getting the idea out into the world.
You
know, we've got the flip charts, we've got the ideas, we've got the marketing plan. Now we have to execute. What are some of the forces of that collaboration that come into play when you're actually producing the creative idea?
Well, the thing that kills innovation and change more than anything else is the not invented here syndrome. Basically, if you and I come up with something we think is smart within a very big organization, as soon as we start taking it to people who didn't come up with that idea, they're not going to look at the idea necessarily as good. They're going to look at it as, what have these two come up with and how is it going to affect me? Mm-hmm. Okay. If you involve all relevant stakeholders, both internal and external, basically you are killing in the process all the ideas which that group can't really process and can't really see value in. And you are making sure that the idea that survives this group is an idea that that group wants to see win. They want to see it be successful. So if you've ever been in a situation where you've worked with a team and they've come up with something they've fallen in love with, and then they've taken it to some other part of the company to get buy-in, and that other part of the company has said nope, or they've modified it to so in a way that they feel very comfortable with it. Basically, you're taking the life out of it, and it takes time, and it's wasteful in terms of resources, this method. So just get somebody to represent the functions that can say no or modify it right from the start. Get their input. Get them to build it with you. It will be a better product. It will get to the market in a better shape.
You're really giving us a glimpse behind the scenes of this kind of creative process. I think a lot of people think there's this lightning bolt, and then I'm supposed to come into your office and make you see why this is such a great idea, you know, and somehow sell you or persuade you on it. But you're really turning that inside out, aren't you?
Well, I mean, it's a question of likelihood and percentages, all right? We all fall in love with the beautiful narratives of, you know, Steve Jobs saying, I'm going to invent the iPhone. I'm not going to ask anybody if they like it. I'm just going to make it the way it should be because I'm a visionary.
And we love the tale that there were no focus groups. There were no market research.
And everybody just falls in love with this thing and it changes the world. Okay. All right. If that's what happened, fine. I'm not going to say it didn't, but it's one in a million, right? The odds of that happening are so small as to be absolutely idiotic to try and do it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So if you're in the business of not losing money and being successful, you want to do it the smart way. You want to come up with things that the market is interested in, you know the market is interested in, and the market is ready for, and that your company is absolutely convinced from top to bottom is needed and can be done well by that company. I always say that the best strategy isn't the best strategy theoretically. It's the best strategy your company can and will deliver.
That's exactly right. Well, terrific book. I can't wait to read it in detail. But give us a glimpse also then into your creative process of actually writing the book. Obviously, you and I have a lot of shared experiences in crafting creative material and so forth. But what about this book process for you?
Well, you've written a lot of books, so you know more about this than I do. I can only talk about this book. And the background is that I am not a writer. You know, creatives, broadly speaking, tend to fall into the people who write and the people who doodle. I started my life in the doodle camp and lived happily like that for many years.
Doodling pays well.
Doodling pays well, but it's not a transferable skill when you want to write a book. That's what I'm getting.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So the actual writing of the book was difficult for me, I have to admit. In terms of putting down on a page the process that I use and that my company uses, it wasn't that hard, but it was the only difficult part was generalizing. Because what I discovered in writing the book is that we are always used to applying our methodology in specific situations, right? When you have a client or a project that is well-defined. And that allows you to be quite precise in the way you explain it and you organize it. And when you write a book, you have no idea of the situation the person who's going to pick up that book is in. You have to generalize so much that became uncomfortable. And, you know, the opposite of generalization is writing a book that is so dense with, you know, specific variants according to the various situations that it's boring and impenetrable. I actually wrote this book twice. I wrote it, the first draft of the book had tried too much to address all the variables and was, you know, frankly, a mess. it was hard to read because there were so many, you know, almost contradicting things. And so the second version of the book was simplified. It was just about, okay, we're going to make this sweeping generalization and live with it.
There you go. Well, there's a certain courage to looking at your own work and saying this needs to be, you know, sort of redone.
Yeah. But I think one of the transferable skills of doodling and, you know, doing, you know, spending a lot of time working in applied creativity is that you do have an instinct to make everything as simple as you can. Mm-hmm. So I think the first draft was me sort of getting all the information out. And the second draft was me doing what I know how to do in theory, making something coherent and reasonably easy to understand.
Yes. And like you said before, when it's your own personal passion, there's a different set of motivations, a different set of drivers. You know, you're not trying to meet a client brief. You're not trying to meet a client deadline. You know, you're trying to do this. I think that's good advice for a lot of authors out there. I can't help but think about the people that are listening. Because, I mean, one of our premises is that people have these creative ideas that they're trying to get out into the world. And everyone says, I want to write a book someday.
Well, you've got to start. But interestingly enough, Mark, one of the big things that changed between the first draft and the second is that I sent the first draft to clients and colleagues and asked them to read it and give me their feedback. And the book wouldn't be as good as it is if I hadn't had those people giving me their points of view and their opinions. You know, it really was incredibly valuable. So the only piece of advice I would give somebody is, if you want to write a book, okay, do it. But before you try and publish it, get somebody who knows what you're writing about to read it and tell you what they think. And it has to be somebody who cares enough to actually tell you the truth.
There you go. Well, I think I know a circle of people that you know that would be very forthcoming.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's good. But you're applying that same collaborative philosophy, though, even in creating your own book. It's like, I need to get the customer's feedback to make sure that I'm communicating something that would be worthwhile.
Yeah. It's two different worlds. I think people need to understand that if you're writing a novel, that's your vision, all right? And nobody can say that the idea on page 3 is wrong or right. That's your thing, okay? But if you're trying to do something which is helping people, which is explaining something, or you're doing something that pertains to a business venture, because, you know, this book explains what our business does, it's sharing a methodology, but it's also explaining what our company exists to do, okay? And if you're doing that, there isn't a question of what you want to do. It's what people understand. It goes back to that thing about context.
Yes. Well, let's get a couple of details on the book, and then I have one more question for you. But our guest has been Peter John Comber. His book is The Forces of Collaborative Creativity, A Practical Guide to Creative Teamwork, specifically in the healthcare business, but I'm sure these principles apply in many, many industries. So tell us how to find the book.
You can go on Amazon, because you can buy it as a Kindle book. You can buy it as a physical book. You can go direct to the publisher's site. So if you go to practicalinspiration.com in the search, put the name of the book, you can buy the book directly from the publisher as well, which is actually nicer than buying it from Amazon, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, great. What a fantastic conversation, Peter. It's great catching up with you and talking the big picture of creativity. I guess as we close, you're in Milan, Italy, more than famous for creative, you know, inspiration and history. Do you derive some of that inspiration for yourself from just your environment?
Definitely. Definitely. I think one of the worst effects of COVID for me has been the fact that museums have been closed and, you know, theaters have been closed. And I think one of the joys of living in a city is that there's so much cultural offering. And I think I said earlier, you need to be creative, you need diverse stimulus. And I think the only way to get diverse stimulus is to go out and see what's going on. Mm-hmm. And being in a city makes that relatively easy, because there's so much on offer. There's art. But, you know, right now there's not that much going on. I went to see a very beautiful exhibition on Georges Latour, but it was hard to get tickets because they're only allowing very few people in the exhibition at any given time. There's a whole process of getting in around, you know, measuring your temperature and the whole thing, which takes a little bit of the poetry out of it. But
that's fair.
But yeah, I think, you know, being in a city, especially a big city with a cultural history is a big plus if you're a creative.
Fantastic. Well, Peter, thanks again for a great conversation. Really enjoyed it. And all the best with the new book.
Well, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, my guest has been Peter Giancomber from Milan, Italy, a creative entrepreneur, strategist, and now author of a new book, The Forces of Collaborative Creativity. And here's to your world of creativity. And certainly we hope to unlock the world from COVID and stay-at-home restrictions very soon. But until then, we can keep our minds unlocked, keep our creativity flowing, and get our creative work out into the world. Thanks for listening.
Unlocking your world of creativity with Mark Stinson. Copyright 2020.
Join me again next time with more on how to tap into your most original thinking, get inspiration from experts' own experiences, and gain specific tools, exercises, and formulas to help organize your ideas. And most of all, learn to make the connections and create the opportunities to get your creative work out into the world. Our podcast is supported by Adobe and the Adobe Creative Cloud. We use Audition, Photoshop, Premiere Rush, Acrobat, InDesign, even Illustrator to produce this podcast. So you can discover the Adobe Creative Cloud and take advantage of the learning, inspiration, and community resources to help you accomplish your creative goals. I'm Mark Stinson. You can connect with me on LinkedIn or check out my website at www.mark-stinson.com. Thanks for listening.